want to visit with you about the idea of sacrifice. The study is designed to impress upon our minds the idea of a sacrifice and what a sacrifice is. In the book of Exodus, chapter 20, the Lord said, "An altar of earth you shall make for me, and you shall sacrifice on it your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your sheep and your oxen. In every place where I record my name, I will come to you and I will bless you." You know, as the children of Israel left Egypt and they began to journey and they began to head toward that promised land, in each place they went and they camped, they stopped and they built an altar. And he said of earth, I did a little research on this. If you continue reading there in Exodus, he goes on to tell them you cannot build an altar of hewn stone because your tools will pollute it. They had to build an altar of earth or of stones that they found in whatever condition they were. There were several particular things about an altar. It could not have stairs going up to the altar because he said you might uncover one another's nakedness. I suppose if it was that high that it had to have stairs, well, you could see up the priest's garment. But at any rate, I suppose this would be an altar. Up at the top is where the fire would be. You can see there's a goat there. And these individuals are going to come and going to make a sacrifice unto God. And God said, if you do this, I will bless you. I will bless you. Here's a couple other images I found of altars. I don't know how good all these are. I don't know how well maybe you can even see them. They always look better at home on the computer. But once again, you have a ramp going up and you have the fire and you have the priest or the Levites there. This is the same image here. This one on top you can't see quite as well. I think we all have in our mind the idea of a sacrifice and perhaps what that would be like. But I want you to give that some thought with me, and I want to impress this upon your mind. In Leviticus chapter 1, beginning in verse 1, the Bible says, "The Lord called unto Moses and spake unto him out of the tabernacle of the congregation, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, If any man of you bring an offering unto the Lord, ye shall bring your offering of the cattle, even of the herd and of the flock. If his offering be a burnt sacrifice of the herd, let him offer a male without blemish. He shall offer it of his own voluntary will at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation before the Lord. And he shall put his hand upon the head of the burnt offering, and it shall be accepted for him to make atonement for him. And he shall kill the bullock before the Lord, and the priest Aaron's son shall bring the blood and sprinkle the blood round about upon the altar that is by the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And he shall flay the burnt offering and cut into his pieces. And the sons of Aaron, the priest, shall put fire upon the altar and lay the wood in order upon the fire. And the priest, Aaron's son, shall lay the parts, the head and the fat, in order upon the wood that is on the fire, which is on the altar. But his inwards and his legs shall he wash with water. And the priest shall burn all on the altar to be a burnt sacrifice, an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto the Lord." Well, we have this idea in our head of a sacrifice, and we typically think of Christ. But I want you to think about this man in a time when the economy was driven solely on herds of animals. He goes out into the field, and he begins to look at his flock, his herd. He's trying to determine which is the best that I have. And as he looks throughout the herd and as he looks at these animals and he thinks on each one, he sees one to him that perhaps is the best. Maybe it's the largest. Maybe it's conformed the best. Maybe it has the best temperament. Maybe in every way it's the best. However, it has a flaw. And so it won't do. And so what's the next best? Or maybe the next best. And as he looks over all these animals, he realizes none of these will do. And so he decides, I will trade 3 or 4 of these lesser animals to someone for the best I can get. And he brings that animal there to the altar and he kills it. The word sacrifice in the Hebrew means to slaughter an animal. To slaughter an animal. He kills it there. And they have containers there and they gather that blood. They cut that animal into pieces and the priest lay the hand there and they carry it up there and they put that body on the fire. They pour the blood around that altar there and they begin to burn and it begins to stink. The hair of it begins to burn and all those parts of it, the fat begins to fry and drip to the ground and flame up and smoke. And it's a sweet savor to God. And it's probably very difficult for us to get into our mind how common the odor, how common the sight, how common the routine of going to the herd and sorting through the herd to choose out your very best. You see, this is the best and it doesn't have a blemish. Let's take this one. And you're going to sacrifice the best thing you've got. You'd like to keep it. It's the most valuable. You know, these cows, the calves today, $1,500 for your kind of regular or average ordinary calf. I'd like to keep it. I'd like to let it be the bull of my whole herd. But I can't do that. I've got to sacrifice it. You know what happens to the sacrifice is it's brought. It is offered. He said voluntarily offered. It is killed. It is burnt. And it is finished. And this was, of course, repeated from time to time. In the book of Leviticus, chapter 22, verse 19, he says, "Ye shall offer at your own will a male without blemish of the beeves, of the sheep or the goats, but whatsoever hath a blemish, that shall ye not offer, for it shall not be acceptable for you." You know, this sacrifice that is made is made for you. It's made for me. It's made for my family. It's made for my people. And so when I go out into the herd and I begin to look at the herd and think about what's there, this sacrifice that I have to make, it's for me and it's for my family. He says in verse 21, whosoever offereth a sacrifice of the peace offering unto the Lord to accomplish his vow, or a freewill offering of the beeves or sheep, it shall be perfect to be accepted. There shall be no blemish therein. Blind or broken or maimed or having a wren or scurvy or scabbed, ye shall not offer these unto the Lord, nor make any offering by fire of them upon the altar unto the Lord. Most of these things you probably understand. A wren was a oozing sore. Scurvy was sores on the body. He said, either a bullock or a lamb that hath anything superfluous or lacking in his parts, thou mayest offer for a freewill offering, but for a vow it shall not be accepted. Ye shall not offer unto the Lord that which is bruised or crushed or broken or cut. Neither shall ye make any offering thereof in your land. Neither from a stranger's hand shall ye offer the bread of your God of any of these, because their corruption is in them and blemishes be in them. They shall not be accepted of you. And so we go out into the herd and we begin to look and we begin to decide, well, this one's got this problem. You know, one of my best heifers this year, most of her ears are froze off. She kind of looks like Shrek with our little stubby ears. Can't offer that. Can't do that. Even though she's maybe my best one. Best in size, best in shape. Her ears are gone. And so you sort through this herd thinking, I've got to offer something for me and for my family there. And you sort through the herd and there it is. There it is. The best. The best. And you lead this animal into town. And you slay it. You, with your own hand, you cut its throat. And the blood gushes out, and you gather that blood. The priests there help you cut that animal. You flay it into pieces, and it's arranged just so on the altar. And then the fire begins to consume it, and the fat drips out of it, and the flesh burns, and it would be not that good a smell. And it's finished. You've made your sacrifice, and you go on your way. In the book of Malachi, chapter 1, verses 7 through 9, he says, ye offer polluted bread upon my altar. And ye say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that ye say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. And if ye offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? And if ye offer the lame and the sick, is it not evil? Offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee or accept thy person? Saith the Lord of hosts. And now I pray you beseech God that he will be gracious unto us. This hath been by your means. Will he regard your person? Saith the Lord of hosts. You know, in time, year by year, for quite a few years have passed from Exodus to Malachi, in time, this is what they begin to bring. They brought the blind. They brought the scabbed and the covered in warts. This old cow here has only got three legs. This is what they brought. And God said, it's evil. This thing you do is evil. You're to bring without blemish and without spot, and you bring me this. And you put it on my table as bread. We think of food. I don't know how well you can tell, but this, I searched on Google Images, a feast. And this is what I found, a feast. And down here are steaks and a table just covered with a meal that would feed a great many people. A feast. He says, you offered me polluted bread. I don't know how well you can tell. This is a moldy old hamburger, some rotten fruit, and a moldy hot dog. He said, instead of the feast, you offer me this spoiled food. He said, it's evil. You know, in Genesis chapter 22 and verse 2, God says, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. You're probably familiar with the story there. He evidently built an altar as God had directed him. He put the fire and prepared it, or wood there, and prepared to slay his son. God asked him to do this. He commanded him, you go and you sacrifice your son. And he went. He went. I've always thought it curious that Abraham didn't say, well, you know what? I've got to work tomorrow. There's things to do. I've got a lot of work planned for this young man. He tends to my herds. He tends to my flocks. He helps me. In other words, he's very valuable to me. There was no excuse at all. Only Abraham rose early in the morning. He got up to be about the business of this sacrifice. Now, I don't expect you maybe can read this. This is a letter, probably not the original letter, from Abraham Lincoln to a Mrs. Bixby, Boston, Massachusetts. He says, I have been shown in the files of the War Department a statement of the Adjutant General of Massachusetts that you are the mother of five sons who have died gloriously on the field of battle. I feel how weak and fruitless must be any word of mine which should attempt to beguile you from the grief of a loss so overwhelming. But I cannot refrain from tendering you the consolation that may be found in the thanks of the Republic which they died to save. I pray that our Heavenly Father may assuage the anguish of your bereavement and the cherished memory of the loved and lost, and the solemn pride that must be yours to have laid so costly a gift on the altar of freedom. I have been told that this maybe wasn't even a true story. I don't know. I was told it was in the newspaper in Boston in 1864. I don't know if that's true either. It's immaterial. The idea I'd like to impress on your mind is the idea of laying a costly sacrifice on the altar. We are asked in the book of Romans, chapter 12, verse 1, by the apostle Paul, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Present your bodies a living sacrifice. Holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. What did you bring to the altar? What this last week, what did you come and sacrifice of your life? Paul says, I beseech you, I'm begging you to present to your body a living sacrifice. He didn't ask us to go and kill ourselves at the altar. He didn't ask us to take a calf. He's asked us to sacrifice of our lives, our time, our abilities, our talents, our strength. What did you bring? In Mark chapter 8, and there verse 34, the Bible says of Jesus, when he had called the people unto him with his disciples also, he said unto them, whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, whosoever shall lose his life for my sake shall save it, and the gospel's the same shall save it. You know, as Jesus was condemned to die, they put on him the cross. and he carried it, evidently till he became exhausted and could no longer, but he carried it to Golgotha. And I think the idea of that was common. Criminals who were punished to death by a cross, they carried their cross. They carried it out there to the hill. I don't know if they had to help place it in the hole and erect it there, but they carried that cross. And part of that punishment was the burden, the weight of the physical cross. Part of it was the shame of carrying that cross there. You're going to die. Everybody's watching. You carry the instrument of your death. Part of that was emotional. You know, he says, deny yourselves, take up the cross, and follow me. In the book of Matthew chapter 10 and verse 38, he says, he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it. I've found it curious for many years, the phrase, if you find your life, you lose it. If you save your life, you lose it. If you lose your life for my sake, you find it. But I think the meaning here is wrapped up in the idea of sacrifice, in the idea of self-denial, in the idea of taking the cross. If you live for yourself and you sacrifice nothing, then you have your life. You have it. And you have your own will. You do what you want to do. But if you sacrifice your will and you deny yourself, if you take up the cross, no matter how heavy or how hard, with the shame of it, with the ridicule of it, and you carry that cross, you sacrifice your life. I think that's the idea. He that findeth his life shall lose it. If you live for yourself and you are unwilling to sacrifice for God, you're going to lose in the end. But if you come to the altar and make a willing sacrifice and you surrender your life for God, in the end, you will find life. He says, deny yourself. I will not do what I want. I will do what Jesus wants. I want to ask you a question. In what way in this last week have you denied yourself? Did you, instead of watching a TV program, open God's book and study? Did you, instead of eating daily food, fast in prayer over some problem or heartache? Did you surrender your time of labor and making money to go and visit someone who was sick? I mean, in what way do we sacrifice? In what way do we deny? You know, I think a lot of people feel like, well, I could be out drinking beer, and I could be out fornicating, and I could be out partying. I'm not doing that. I'm denying myself that. You know, self-denial doesn't begin with avoiding the sinful things God has commanded us to avoid. It's much greater than that. He says we should take up the cross. We not only deny ourselves, but we take up the cross with every burden of Christianity, whatever it was, whatever it is. You know, there's times Christians are called to carry a great burden. There's times that we have to stand for things that are not popular in this world. There's times that we must endure shame, ridicule. From time to time, we're told we're Bible thumpers and we're pew jumpers and we're Campbellites, and we could go on and on and on. I told a person not long ago I did never drink socially. He said, "Oh, you're one of those." He said, "You never drink at all." I said, "I didn't say that. I believe alcohol's medicinal. I think that's pretty clear in the Bible." But you know, Jesus, I think when he told his disciples to take up the cross, they probably understood that to mean to death. Like he did. They saw him there carry that cross to death. I think they probably understood that meaning. To deny myself to the point that I have to take up my own cross to death. Follow Jesus. I will walk the walk of Christ. Where would Christ have me go? And what would Christ have me do? How can I be an example and a light to others every day as I follow the path that Jesus followed? And if I have in my heart and in my life these three things, a denial of self, a taking up of the cross, and a following Jesus everywhere I go, then every day I am sacrificing. Every day I bring a gift to the altar. Every day I place it there. Well, I'll tell you, if I deny nothing, if I deny nothing, I do everything I want to do. If I don't take up the cross or any burden of it, if I go my own way, then I have sacrificed nothing. In Philippians chapter 1 and verse 20, he says, "According to my earnest expectation and my hope, in that nothing I shall be ashamed, but that with all boldness as always, so now also Christ shall be magnified in my body, whether to be by life or by death, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain." Paul's attitude was that I will be bold as a Christian. I will not be ashamed. I will magnify Christ in my life and with my body, whether it's by life or death. If I'm alive, then I'm going to sacrifice my days for His glory. And if it's through death, then that's good for me, because I get to move on to my reward. What happens to the living sacrifice? Well, it's brought, it's offered, it's repeated. It's brought again, it's offered again, it's repeated, and it increases. This sacrifice increases because it inspires others. It influences our own family to sacrifice. There's a gentleman lived in Gunner, Texas. I was always impressed. The old gentleman seemed very studied. He seemed very pious, I guess is what I would say. He seemed like a very holy person. It would have shocked me to think he ever had an evil thought. I was visiting with him one day, and he said, "I read the New Testament through every week. I read it once a week, the New Testament." Well, I immediately began to make excuses in my mind. That's why I can't do that. I've got to work. I've got kids. I've got to... Yeah, he made a sacrifice to do that. He could have watched TV. He could have did a whole lot of things. But he sacrificed and made time every week when he read the New Testament. That's impressive to me. A living sacrifice is offered, and it's offered again, and it's offered tomorrow and the next day and next week. And it's willing. I think that's one of the beautiful things about it. The sacrifice is willing. That's why Paul didn't command it, I don't guess. He said, I beseech you, brethren. I beg you to do this. Because it's reasonable. It's reasonable that we sacrifice something very precious and very valuable to come and lay that on the altar. In the book of Romans chapter 6 and verse 16, he says, do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness. We all make a choice in this life who we're going to be a slave to. You can be a slave to yourself. You can be a slave to God. You can be a slave to the corporation that you may work for. We present ourselves. We come to the altar. In Romans 6 verse 13, he says, do not present your members as instruments of unrighteousness to sin, but present yourselves to God as being alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness to God. You know, God obviously looked at that altar in a very special way. You build me an altar of earth. You don't use tools on those rocks. You'll pollute it. This is a special thing. This place where these animals were sacrificed. And we prepare our hearts with self-denial. When we take up the cross and we follow Jesus, we make an altar in our heart and we sacrifice our life to Him. And you know what? That's altogether and totally reasonable for what He's done for me. For the gifts He's given me. In the book of Galatians chapter 2, and verse 20, he says, I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. We can live a life of sacrifice every day that magnifies Christ. And we do that not because we're special. We do that through Christ. Because he gave himself. I want to ask you a question. What do you offer? In this last week, what have you offered? Have you offered spoiled food? Have you brought that and placed it on the altar? Have you offered a feast? Have you placed it there? You know what? You've sacrificed something. You've either sacrificed something rotten and evil, or you've sacrificed something spotless and pure. What sacrifice are you living? Can you live this week in a way that sacrifices something precious to God's glory? Can you do that this week if you haven't did that last week?